Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Premier League is back. Excitement as Old Trafford welcomes the former star they feel will guarantee United success, Newcastle manager Steve Bruce. Plus, are you ready for a bottom two battle between Norwich and Arsenal? And more importantly, are they? There's internationals from England having problems at the polls to Spain facing Kosovo, a national team their government don't even recognise, sort of like Gavin Williamson, but multiplied a bit. All the details on those stories and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Yeah, hello, listener. It's Thursday the 9th of September. I'm raring to go in team totally branded tracksuits are Duncan Alexander. Hello, Duncan.
Hello, James.
Also here, Adrian Clark.
Hello. Excited to get another start. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
No, we're excited, Adrian. As indeed we are at the presence of Nuruddin Chowdhury, a.k.a. Noz, a.k.a. Bearded Genius, newly of Project Football. Noz.
Yeah, that's right. I like the way I've got so many AKAs, like I'm some sort of rapper.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, you represent a similar kind of cultural entity.
Well, that's it. I bring a little bit of diversity to proceedings.
Tick. Project Football, by the way, it's, you know, just in case anyone thinks that's one of those, like, the sort of name you hear at Sky Sports in December when big clubs are deciding they're going to slim the league down to five teams and take all the money or whatever. That's not what Project Football is.
No, it's basically looking at football and social, basically creating banging content. Like, the way I think of it is I'd like to do to football and social media what iPhones did for the mobile phone. That kind of thing, not too
destroy
sort of ambitious,
humanity.
But yeah, destroy humanity, and you have to pay extra for everything, and everything's exclusive.
So far, I've got to say I've enjoyed the content a lot. The João Cancelo double nutmeg was extraordinary. What would be your favourite if you wanted to point people at one of the kind of japes or memes or bits of content on Project Football? What would your favourite bit be so far?
I mean, we're just starting out, but like I had a bit of fun with Gavin Williamson, obviously, with his mistaken identity. We put a picture of Dominic Raab up and played it straight, and we had quite a few people saying, actually, that's not Gavin Williamson, but yeah, that was fun. But no, it's been good. Got loads of exciting plans, and yeah. See how it goes. I like to think that me joining Project Football is like the biggest sign of the season, close season. I don't think there's been anything else to compare, really.
Interesting. All right. Well, there's plenty to discuss today. We've got the international break, and also perhaps you're more excited by the return of club football, although not for some players. Indeed, it seems as though the international break will continue for certain stars who didn't go to their international fixtures and are, as a result, facing FIFA bans. We'll discuss that as we come to those relevant games. But the fixtures are Palace Spurs getting things underway Saturday lunchtime. Then there's six games at 3 o'clock. You've got Watford Wolves, Brentford Brighton. Less alliteratively, there's Man United, Newcastle, Saints West Ham, Leicester Man City and Arsenal Norwich in the battle of the bottom two. Saturday tea time, it's a date for Chelsea and Villa. There's just one game on Sunday, but it's a potentially epic Leeds-Liverpool. And on Monday evening drama, thy name is Everton-Burnley. Only one place to start.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Old Trafford, by the way. Man United taking on Newcastle there Saturday at 3 o'clock. Hey, let's talk about Cristiano Ronaldo. Noz, are you going along to this second coming?
I'm not, because funnily enough, my usual source of tickets was out. There's slightly more demand than usual. I was really hoping there was a bit of talk that Ronaldo wouldn't be making his debut on the weekend. So I was really hoping that happened, but yeah, alas, it's happening. And yeah, it's exciting. It's also like from my point of view, it's slightly conflict. I've got slightly conflicted opinions. Because of stuff that's obvious on and off the pitch, but the thing I find interesting is, without sort of going into detail about anything, I think it's okay to have mixed feelings. I think a lot of people are rightly excited about this amazing player playing for their club, and there's people who are excited but at the same time conflicted about other things. And personally, like I think that's fine. I think it's fine to have those two thoughts in your head at the same time. What I find a little bit strange is if anyone highlights anything that confuses matters or sort of tempers that enthusiasm, people who are excited, other people who are excited, hate that. It's almost as if they don't want to think about other things that complicate their excitement. And I just find that a little bit strange, just because I think it's okay. I think it's okay to have conflicting sort of thoughts about things. And it's a little bit like, I am a Smiths fan and I was a Morrissey fan. And right. I feel conflicted about that. It's not making any judgment. It's just having a conflicting view of a situation. I think that's absolutely fine. And again, I know you discussed it last week, and you quite rightly said every time Ronaldo's mentioned, you can't go into everything, otherwise you'd never have a chat about football. But I think it's fine to be massively excited that this amazing player's coming to your club, whilst also having a conscience about it.
Even taking those specific issues aside, there's been a weird thing with Messi and Ronaldo over the last decade where we don't remember the Stones and the Beatles, but it's become this kind of insanely polarised thing. So that, you know, if you're a Messi fan, a certain type of Messi fan, then anything Ronaldo does, you automatically have to dismiss, and vice versa. And it's quite a strange thing to see that come to the Premier League with Ronaldo, because obviously when he left in 2009, social media was a relatively new thing. So
it was before Project Football, for example.
It was before Project Football, but I think prepare yourself for the amount of times you're going to read Penaldo in the next 6 months, because it's coming.
But you mentioned not the fact that there are off-field concerns, but also on-field concerns as well, with the Man United's answer to Morrissey returning to the team. A couple of listeners raising issues here. Spuds in Water saying, is Cristiano Ronaldo the new Alexis Sanchez, an ageing player you evidently haven't planned for and don't really need? Dan Lewis, meanwhile, asking, what things are statistically more likely to happen this week than free kick specialist Ronaldo scoring a free kick? Adrian, how seamlessly do you think he's going to slot in, and do you see him as a massive positive for United?
Yeah, look, I think from a tactical angle, his arrival brings with it certain limitations, but they've re-signed a player that hugely reinforces their attacking strengths. If Cristiano Ronaldo had signed for a team that were notorious for pressing the opposition and squeezing inside the opposition half and defending from the front, then it would be a big problem. It could derail everything that they've worked on, because Cristiano Ronaldo won't do that. He'll walk around until the ball comes near him, and then he'll come alive and it'll make the difference. With United, they weren't like that. They haven't been a pressing side. They're more than happy to sit off and let teams come at them so that they can then strike hard and fast. So I don't think it's going to derail anything. It will block the pathway of Mason Greenwood as a centre forward, potentially. It will limit Cavani's game time, but he's a goal muncher. He averaged 5.4 shots a game. He was Serie A's top scorer last season. He scored 55% of his goals with his right foot, 24% with his head, 21% with his left foot. So he's one of the most adaptable finishers in world football as well. Provided Man United get the service right, he's going to challenge for the Golden Boot. he's going to be great.
The only thing I would counter that slightly with is that United, they are a counter-attacking team generally at the moment, and they're the only team to average fewer than two men in the box from open play crosses. And as you pointed out, you know, Ronaldo's headed ability is one of his main strengths now. So they might have to adapt a little bit there. But the thing with Mason Greenwood is funny, because Ronaldo is older than the first episode of Saint and Greavesy, but Mason Greenwood is younger than the ITV tactics truck. So if you want to see how time elapses, there's a good example.
Right. You compared him in a piece, Duncan, this week, not to Morrissey uniquely, but to Sir Stanley Matthews.
Yes, it was a piece about can players still do it at this age? And obviously,
yes.
Historically, the best player over 36 in terms of goals is Gianfranco Zola, who got 14 in his last season at Chelsea, the season that basically snuck Chelsea into the Champions League and convinced Abramovich to buy Chelsea and et cetera, et cetera. So I would imagine, as Adrian said, that Ronaldo will get more than 14 goals and therefore become officially the greatest pensioner since Sir Stanley Matthews.
I find it, in some ways, obviously, it's a no-brainer, but in other ways, I find it slightly strange that United went for it, just in terms of they got rid of Lukaku. And that was in spite of Lukaku having a good goal-scoring record for United and having obvious qualities. But it was kind of decided that the attacks going through Lukaku sort of slowed things down, and there was various things that weren't working and it didn't fit into what Solskjaer wanted to do. There could easily be a situation with Ronaldo where he scores a bucket load of goals. So it's good for Ronaldo because he scores loads of goals. But it essentially everything funnels through him, and everyone has to accommodate him, and so it might not be as good for United as it is for Ronaldo, and looking at his goal scoring this season in isolation might look great, but not for the team as a whole. And again, like, another thing is attitude. It'll be interesting to see what kind of Ronaldo plays for United, because a lot of people are saying it'll just lift everyone in terms of training, in terms of the professionalism and the winning sort of mentality. But also, if things aren't going right for Ronaldo, he's the most petulant person, and like the flappy arms. Like I'm wondering, the first time Wan-Bissaka misplaces a cross, like, will the flappy arms come out? And that can really affect people. There was a point with Thierry Henry where he was almost intimidating to the rest of the Arsenal team just because he was so good, and also got frustrated because not everyone was on his level. So it'll be interesting to see how Ronaldo affects the team in that respect.
Yeah, Ian Wright flapped his arms to me once in 95, 96. And yeah, I can still think about it. Yeah, it's a killer. Yeah.
I mean, in that example, he was right to do so. But
always.
Newcastle turning up at Old Trafford 3 o'clock on Saturday. By the way, the last time Ronaldo actually faced Newcastle at that ground, he scored the first of his 51 career hat-tricks. That was back in January 2008.
That's his only ever Premier League hat-trick. He's currently one hat-trick in the Premier League behind Kevin Nolan, who is a millennial, technically, based on age. So there you go.
Also famous for flapping his arms, of course, for Kevin Nolan. The Magpies are waiting for their first win of the season. They've only won one of their last 38 league visits to Old Trafford. That was for Alan Pardew's Newcastle against David Moyes' United in 2013. And to make matters worse, as it stands, they won't be able to use Miguel Almiron, and double whammy, they probably won't be facing Fred either. Those are two of the players for whom international break is set to continue. The Premier League clubs appealing, I think, to FIFA, because the various FAs of countries that Premier League sides haven't released their players to have called on FIFA to ban or suspend the players for the subsequent league fixture. Players not released for an international window can be banned for 5 days after the window ends under FIFA regulations. Appeals are underway, we understand, so that might change. But as it stands, that's going to have quite an impact on this weekend. What do you make of Newcastle? Any chance of spoiling this kind of soft launch for Ronaldo?
I think if you wanted to have a Premier League debut or return against anyone, it would be Newcastle, just because they themselves kind of, you speak to any Newcastle fan, like they've already sort of conceded, and it's a case of damage limitation. But that those are exactly the kind of games that go wrong. Like, everything's set up for United to win, Ronaldo to score a brace or whatever, and sort of Steve Bruce to be very kind and polite about United afterwards. But it doesn't always work out like that.
Kind of does, though, in Newcastle's case.
Yeah, I was going to say, fairy tales don't happen there, even though they're trying to sort of make the dream real by signing Santiago Munoz. Is it Munoz? I'm just trying to crowbar my name into his name. Is it Munoz?
I think it is. Yeah.
But yeah. So you never know. I'm just slightly confused. You were talking about the players that can't play. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, if the players do play, say Newcastle and United both play their Brazilians, I believe that the punishment is a 3-0, automatic 3-0 loss. What about if both teams play the players? Like, what's the result? What's the goal difference? What happens?
3-3 draw, isn't it? Greatest league in the world.
Ronaldo will claim United's 3 goals.
Yeah.
Boy, that's an interesting question, Nuruddin. That's one that we'll have to look into. Well, much more to come from the Premier League. Exciting set of fixtures on the way. But next up, let's tackle the midweek internationals, asking big questions like, is Gareth Southgate just Ollie with a waistcoat?
Ah, the summer was fun, wasn't it? No allegiances, everyone getting behind England, Three Lions being sung everywhere. But now the Premier League is back, get Grealish off the bench, he can stay on it at City. Pickford might have been a safe pair of hands, now he's just a pair. And enough of Jules Rimet dreaming, now it's our turn to dream. So kiss goodbye to that vomit-inducing unity and welcome back proper football. Let's celebrate flair on the grass, not a flare up the... Paddy Power! 18+, begambleaware.org.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Tuesday and Wednesday saw this set of World Cup qualifiers concluding in Europe, although they're still going on in South America, curiously. Headlines anyway, Italy made it a record 37 games unbeaten with a 5-0 win against Lithuania. And Netherlands got revenge for that shock defeat back in the spring in Istanbul by beating Turkey back in Amsterdam, 6-1, Memphis Depay with a hat-trick. Hat-trick as well for Erling Haaland in Norway's 5-1 win over Gibraltar. The Danes beat Israel 5-0. They're now the only side with a perfect record because England dropped points away in Poland. 1-1 draw in Warsaw. This was Wednesday night. I think we all saw this. Kane put England ahead kind of out of nowhere with that wonderful curling shot. Then a stoppage time equaliser for the hosts after Jakob Moda skipped past a Walker like Sheriff Rick in his prime, finding Lewandowski, who then puts in the provider to Damian Szymanski for the equaliser. Only the second goal that England have conceded in qualifying, and they both came against Poland. Now, Adrian, Gareth no longer turns you on. We know this. Are you going to have a go about the fact that he didn't make any subs?
No, I don't think it's worth us berating him particularly. It was strange. And I do feel that Gareth Southgate kind of freezes during the course of matches. I don't know whether he's so into it that he just forgets to make these changes. He's so absorbed in the action. Or whether this is something that it's a trust issue with some of the guys that he's got on the bench. It shouldn't be. Because I don't remember an England squad being as strong as this, really, depth-wise. So he's got players that he can call upon, in my opinion, and trust. So now, I found it strange, but had Poland not scored that goal, we probably wouldn't have been that worried about it. I thought England were flagging a little bit just in the lead-up to that goal, so I would have made the changes, if only, to be honest, to disrupt the game. Because Poland had a bit of a head of steam. We had the one-goal lead. What I think a savvy head coach, and you know my views on this, Gareth Southgate is not a savvy head coach. What a savvy head coach would do is break up the rhythm and suddenly put on a sub with 15 minutes to go, and then 3 minutes later, chuck on another one, and then towards the end, maybe a third. He could have put five on, of course. He could have absolutely killed any momentum that Poland had, and he didn't see that. He didn't. That didn't come into his mind. But I'm not surprised it didn't come into his mind, because I think his in-game management is as mediocre as it gets, really. So yeah, look, I'm not going to hammer him too much. I probably just have.
Well, you should kind of have, really.
But yeah,
I hate to hear the hammering.
It was something we could sort of criticise him for, wasn't it? No doubt about it.
Right. Well, we could praise him equally for the fact that these are the first points that England have dropped in these matches so far, that he has got England to a World Cup semi-final and then a Euro final. But there are those who take your side of the argument. United Iconic are tweeting in on a similar theme, saying, is Southgate just Ollie with a waistcoat? Lack of substitutions. An insistence on playing a double pivot will only get you so far and no more. Good man manager, but tactically limited. Relies on individual brilliance, etc. Is that a fair comparison, do you think?
I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a better tactician than the majority of people in this country. I think he's had some really good tactical moments. So,
In the country, like if you walk into Asda and go,
that's even more damning than when you went in on Southgate.
Keith, he works at the zoo. He can't organise a team safe life.
I'm gonna just say, I thought for the most part, it was a good game. England's attitude was great. I thought the energy was good. There was loads to like about that performance. It was a tough game. They drew it. It's not the end of the world.
I had to watch it in my new way of coping with international football post all the horribleness of the Euros, which is social media off, sound virtually off, no glasses on, so I can just make out patterns rather than individuals. And I really enjoyed the game. It was... In that context, it was a kind of reminded me of a kind of Roy of the Rovers sort of thing, where you had Harry Kane as the sort of Roy of the Rovers figure against the crack Eastern European outfit with their equivalent of Roy of the Rovers, who was Lewandowski, and it was like who was going to get the better of the game. And Poland basically ended the match playing like hatchet men from a cartoon. They were committing so many fouls, and I think that backs up Adrian's point of that's when you should have been making some changes to slow it down. But I mean, Kane and Grealish got flipped over a lot of times in that game, and Grealish was getting increasingly upset about it. So
Grealish is increasingly like a kind of running back in American football, though. Gets the ball, makes maybe 3-4 yards, then goes down for the set piece.
Yeah, there was like interminable triangles between Shaw, Grealish and Mason Mount on the left flank, just back and forth, and basically because there was no one in the box. And again, this is kind of left over from the Euros, is that England need to be more confident and need to be a bit more attacking, because I know that's Poland's 20th home game, home qualifier without defeat, so it's not an easy place to go. Mm. But at the same time, it didn't matter really if England lost, so they might as well just go and try and win it rather than, you know, edge a 1-0. So,
Noz, what do you think? Are you going to stick up for Gareth? Are you happy with this result?
I mean, I do think that it's one of those things. Obviously, like, a goal makes a massive difference, but if Lewandowski hadn't produced that amazing cross, then and they'd not scored, like, it would have been a really professional performance and everyone would have been praising it. I think Southgate's England is what it is. It's safety first, which you kind of need to be at international football. Like people want to be entertained a bit more because of the players involved. But that's the kind of manager he is, and you kind of accept it for that. I do think it's interesting. You talked about Grealish and how he performs for England. It was exactly that. It was very telling, that sort of, like, it used to be a tactic from opposition managers to foul Grealish and spread out the fouls so nobody gets sent off. But now it almost seems as if, like, it's a tactic for the teams that have Grealish to get him in those positions, and he will conjure up a foul. There's also a creeping flappiness to his game as well, although it's more towards the referee. But yeah, to be honest, personally, like, I'm still surprised how much I care. Because I'm not a natural England fan, like I can give or take, and I'm like, obviously it's natural to get more excited during an international tournament, and that happened in the summer. But again, it's they're such a lovely bunch of lads, and they obviously have got a love for each other, and Southgate's such a great statesman, sort of, in how he manages the players and what he believes in, and how he communicates with the press. Is that I do find myself caring for them, and then to the extent that when Glick grabbed Kyle Walker's throat. What's that bit?
He didn't grab his throat, though, did he? Or did I miss it? It looked like he could have been caressing it.
It looked like a
stroke under the chin. I thought it might be a Polish gesture of conviviality.
What's that bit? Is it? I want to say Penarin, but that's something else, isn't it?
Yeah,
that throat
apple.
Thing. Yeah, it was very strange. It was a very sort of snide thing to do, and I was surprised that I found myself thinking, Glick, why are you being so sly for? Get off our man.
Glick did seem to choose the role of intense pantomime villain in that game, and I quite enjoyed the referee who just let everything go. It was like, Grealish stopped complaining, Poland stopped being quite as violent, but I'm going to let most of this go, and it actually made for a really good match, so...
Lots of people getting the hump with camel. I'm not sure. I've just been pinching in my under chin area. And you know what? It seems to be a zone of the body of the epidermis.
Tender, isn't it?
No, it's not. Well, mine isn't.
Oh.
I mean, I'm really giving it a good old tweak and I'm not feeling anything. So I'm not sure if Kyle Walker was even aware in the kind of raptus agonisticus or whatever that he was.
So you're saying if you were doing your world's strongest man, and somebody had to lift something up by that part
of the
neck.
Obviously, that's a different paradigm, isn't it? When you, if say, I don't know, if they lifted me up by the neck, I think I'd be aware of it. Yeah, let's see. That could be an event. Anyway, let's get back to a nice reference. Thanks for that. Good. Any other thoughts? Hey, how about Harry Kane's goal? What happened to Chesney on that? Was that Chesney getting it wrong? I know none of us are goalkeepers, but or was it just the amount of curl on the latter part of its trajectory?
Yeah, great swaz, wasn't there, on the ball? Yeah. Loved it. It was a proper hit, and it did move massively. So yeah, I thought all criticism of Chesney was a touch harsh because none of us could have saved it. But I suppose that's not the right gauge.
He's a better goalkeeper than most people in the country.
Exactly.
I don't know what's the matter with me today. Yeah, but there you go. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Anyway, there you go. A point for England, and they're still pretty comfortable on top of the group. Elsewhere, draws galore for Wales, Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. Wales goalless with Estonia, same for Northern Ireland with Switzerland. 1-1 for the Republic of Ireland with Serbia, courtesy of a pretty hilarious Serb own goal.
Robinson flings in the cross. Egan was up there. That's it. Oh, it's gone in! It's an own goal! It's gone in off Milenkovic!
This will have been all over your site, I should think, Moise.
Oh, right in the wheelhouse. That it was just amazing. It's the way he absolutely goes to pelt it. And it hits his own player and smacks in. But I mean, I was just willing something good to happen for Ireland, just because like you can tell that obviously there's been a little bit of criticism, but you can tell that the players and a lot of the fans still have like faith in the manager, and I think that's a really beautiful, wholesome thing, and it just shows that there's a belief that something is sort of growing and building there, and really you just need a few sort of moments of luck in the short term just to sort of give that a bit of validation in at the outset, and then hopefully something can sort of build from there.
Like an international potter. I don't mean the person that goes around making clay stuff, but Graham Potter, but on the international stage.
Okay.
Just needs a result.
Okay, also touching to see in the Wales game, a standing ovation for Gary Speed in the 52nd minute of the game against Estonia. He would have been 52 on Wednesday, the much-missed Gary Speed. Well, there you go. With those results, the only winners, in fact, from the teams in and around the British Isles were Scotland, who had a 1-0 victory in Austria, second win in a row, and that puts them in the driving seat for a playoff spot and potentially a first World Cup appearance since 1998. Nothing can go wrong now. Andrew Slaven joins us to tell us more. Andrew, Lyndon Dykes with the goal from the penalty spot and a 1-0 win away in Austria. They're calling this the biggest Scotland win in a decade and a half. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. You know, if you look back at that goal from James McFadden against France back then, was a pretty big moment for Scotland's history in international tournaments. And do you know what? I mean, you have to look at this game and think that was a must win and certainly a must not lose. It was certainly the same for Austria as well, and you could sense that watching the game that both teams were trying their best. And thankfully for us, we got penalty, which seems to be a good thing for Scotland at the moment, especially with Lyndon Dykes on the spot. But it certainly puts us in the best possible position now going into the final four games.
Right. If you win the next three, which are against Israel, the Faroe Islands and Moldova, so fingers crossed, that means, I think I'm right saying, that you will have already qualified for a playoff spot before your final game against Denmark, who are pretty scary right now.
Israel are a team, we can't forget, we haven't beaten Israel in 90 minutes in our last four games against them. We had to rely on penalties. So, you know, Israel are going to be not an easy task, but it is at home, and we are going to have a raucous Hampden roar, which is going to be amazing. So I am confident, but you shouldn't really be being a Scotland fan.
I thought it was great. I thought it was a really resilient performance, Andrew. Obviously, the three centre-halves did great. Grant Hanley was particularly sort of resolute. Kieran Tierney, part of that back three. I just want to get your opinion on Tierney. If you play the back three, say there was no Andy Robertson, would you still rather have Tierney as part of your back three, or would you rather have him as a wing-back? Because I think there is a quandary there for an Arsenal side that aren't particularly strong at the back. On where best to deploy him if they were to use that shape. Do you like him there or further forward?
I prefer him at left back. That's his best position, 100%. But he has become more versatile. He's very good going forward, but he can, you know, he can defend very, very well. That's his role. That's his job. He got caught out against Denmark. I know that. And I know there's been a bit of a mistake in him in recent years. Injuries haven't helped as well. So he's not had loads and loads of game time. But I think he's the right person to be put in there. And I think you have to have your best players on your pitch. The argument of having Kieran Tierney or Andrew Robertson, I think it's gone now. I think, you know, just get them on the field at the same time. Clark seems to advocate that now as well. You know, particularly when against Denmark, we had so little resources. He put Robertson on the right just to get his best players on the pitch. So I think Kieran Tierney, I would keep him there. And I think he's capable at centre-back.
All right. Well, it's going to be quite an occasion at Hampden Park next month when Israel turn up. Israel, as we mentioned before, beaten 5-0 a midweek by Denmark, who are kind of doing that to everybody right now. That's going to be quite an extraordinary match, a key game in the evolution of this Scotland, Andrew.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard because Scotland go into international tournaments all the time and get some positive results, and then all of a sudden it crumbles and fails away and we don't know where we are anymore. So I'm kind of, you know, if we do get the win, then yeah, it's just a next step. We can't get too ahead of ourselves. Even if we do qualify into the playoffs by finishing second, there's still another two ties to go through. So it's not over yet, but we just need to try and stay positive. It's hard for Steve Clark to keep Scottish fans' confidence levels high. But certainly after that Austrian performance, they certainly did that. And you know what? I just want us to score more than two goals against Israel. That's our biggest problem, is scoring goals. And I just want us to be, we can be confident on the ball, we can be confident going forward, but we just don't have that cutting edge yet, which gives Scotland fans that hope that we can go into any game and boss it. So, fingers crossed.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. With Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which is handy for when Spurs stop pretending to be this ruthless winning machine and revert back to type. Ready for the fast bit? Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. It's over 18s only. And please, gamble responsibly.
Well, more international stuff in October, but right now it's back to the club action. What's next? Saturday at 3...
Oh my, a battle of the bottom two in the Premier League, which always sounds intriguing, even more so when one of those teams is Arsenal. Crikey. Now, Norwich haven't won away at Arsenal since the very first match day of the Premier League back in August 1992. Adrian, do you remember that?
I was there, yeah. I think I was, 17.
Yeah.
I would have been sat in the paddock just behind the dugouts there, roasting hot in my white shirt and awful kipper tie, because that was the thing back then. I would have no doubt shed my sort of velvet blazer that I had at the time, which was an absolute rascal. And I remember it. It was a real off day, I think, for Adams and Boldy. And Mark Robbins got himself a couple of goals. Yeah, it was disastrous start to life in the Premier League, because that was the first season of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Gunners were 2-0 up at half time. Canaries fought back to make it 4-2. Producer Charlie mentioning that Rhythm is a Dancer was number one. There we go. So no victories since then, August 1992, for Norwich. But if ever there was a time to break that run, this is surely it.
Well, that's it. I think it's interesting. It's like the two vanquished teams of City. They're both coming together in like some kind of like death match. But it'll be interesting because in theory, both teams are supposed to be the type of teams that play football the right. I mean, I was about to describe Arsenal as playing football the right way, which is A, incorrect, and B, massively patronising. Like, imagine ever describing Vieira or Petit or that kind of team, just sort of like, oh, they like to play football the right way. Like, in a way, it's sort of like hugely patronising to describe them in those terms. But I don't know what Adrian feels about, like, how it affects Arteta and how long he's got left, how many bad results he's got left.
Well, I don't know. That is the short answer. None of us do, but he's under pressure. Absolutely. Has to be, because results dictate, don't they? And Arsenal being in the bottom reaches of the table is not,
no, they're
not
bottom.
A good look,
actually,
is it?
Actually, bottom.
Actually,
yeah, bottom. Bottom no, reaches.
Arsenal's Adrian Clark. They're in the bottom reaches. They're in and around the bottom. They're bottom. They're bottom, Adrian.
All right, they're bottom. They won't be bottom for long, because they're going to beat Norwich. But look,
I don't think they will. They've got the worst XG conceded. They're in the right position in the league. There's a few teams that aren't in their correct positions as it stands, but I think Arsenal are. And I think this is a massive game. If they lost to Norwich at home, Arteta's not going to survive that, surely.
The rumours are that they've already agreed terms with Antonio Conte, which raises a lot of eyebrows for all sorts of reasons, but it would be an interesting development. Arsenal and Norwich are both currently on 0 points with a goal difference of -9, which means that were either side to lose this game by 4 goals, they would then officially have the worst start in Premier League history after 4 games.
Overtaking Swindon.
Yes. Mm. Yes, Duncan. Yeah.
Yeah, dear.
I don't know.
Now, they didn't lose those first 3 games well. I think that's the takeaway. Look, anybody can lose to Chelsea or City, but what I think you want to see is sort of fight and character and togetherness, bit of spirit, just to give you a little bit more hope. Or if failing that, to see exactly what the game plan was, and that you could see what they were trying, but it didn't quite work out. They were a little bit unlucky, but unfortunately you couldn't say any of that after those two heavy defeats, really, to Chelsea and City. They were as comprehensive as you can get. So look, pressure's on, and if Norwich were to open the scoring on Saturday, and I'm going to be there, then I think that the fan base, which I have to say, inside the stadium, and I know we've only got a small sample size, but those inside the stadium have stuck with the team, have stuck with the manager. If Norwich were to score first, it will be interesting to see how they react.
It certainly will. Ben White could be available after his spell out with COVID-19. Of course, the big summer signing from Brighton. Also possible debuts for Takahiro Tomiyasu, who's coming from Bologna. And for Norwich, Ozan Kabak. All very exciting. That's 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, that's at 3. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about 3 o'clock kickoffs this week, with the United Newcastle game not being televised and etc. This is actually only the third time Arsenal, City, and United will all have played at 3 o'clock on the same Saturday. since the 2000s. So it's pretty rare. In the first two seasons in the Premier League, it happened 24 times. So it does, you know, the 3 o'clock kickoff for a big team, in inverted commas, is pretty rare now. So this is quite an unusual. I guess it's quite unlucky given that it's Ronaldo's second debut, but the way it's turned out. But yeah.
James, in this 3 p.m. Saturday kickoff slot, Arsenal are unbeaten in 26 games. So there you go.
Is that right?
When they do play at this time, they're normally all right.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Up at the other, or at least we won't, at least until, you know, highlights later on. Up at the other end of the table, it's Spurs, of course, who Antonio Conte could have joined. Must be kicking himself. Under Nuno Espirito Santo, they are the only Premier League team with a 100% winning record, 3 wins out of 3. They're also the only team in England's top 4 divisions yet to concede a goal. Spurs are taking on Crystal Palace, and there's question marks over Heung-min Son, who picked up a calf injury on international duty with South Korea. Kane's in form, we know that. Palace could be handing a debut to Odson Edouard, who they brought in from Celtic. Top scorer in the Scottish Premiership for the last 2 seasons. Adrian, how dangerous will he be?
I quite like him. I did a piece on him recently, analysing sort of what he brings to the table. He's got a great first touch, and I think that that will definitely help the new style of play under Vieira, because they want to pass through the thirds. They want to knock the ball around. And I think that he will link play really nicely for them. But he's not been brought in specifically for that. It's because of his finishing. We know that Palace have lacked goal scorers in recent years. So much reliance on Zaha and Benteke to some degree. So he's someone that can finish. Looked at the goals that he scored last season. Real variety. Lots of one-touch finishes. So he's pretty sharp inside the box, especially from low crosses. But I also noted that he scored 3 or 4 goals from outside the box. So if Spurs were to stand off him, or any team in the coming weeks were to stand off him, that's dangerous, because I think he's capable of drilling one into the corner from range. So no, I think it's a really smart signing. Good price as well for a goal scorer. The only caveat is that it's that big step up, isn't it? And how many chances will he get at Celtic? He could miss a few, and it was all right, because he'd get, the more chances would come his way. Here, he's going to have to be a lot more ruthless. And if he isn't, how much would that impact on his confidence? So, wishing the best of luck.
All right, up against the top defence currently in the Premier League. That game coming up Saturday lunchtime. Elsewhere this weekend, Scott Carson in goal for Man City, Claxon. Leicester will be hosting Pep Guardiola's side Saturday at 3 o'clock. Edison has been banned currently by the Brazilian FA, or at least by FIFA at request of the Brazilian FA, for not turning up to their match. Zach Steffen tested positive for COVID-19 while with the USA, which means that Scott Carson is due for only his second appearance with City. His first, I'm not sure if you missed this, came back on the 14th of May. Worryingly, City shipped 3 to Newcastle that day, but emerged 4-3 winners. Nice for Scott to have a run out.
Yeah. I mean, there are other options. They've apparently got 2 other options, one called Kieran Slicker and one called Mickey Van Sass, which is a great name. I mean, if I had to change my name, I think I might change it to Mickey Van Sass.
Slicker would be great, though, because it's City, no?
Yeah. The headlines write themselves.
It sounds like a great detective duo as well, Slicker and Sass.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was their last day in the job. They just had to keep a clean sheet against Leicester, and guess what happened?
Slicker does stuff by the book, but Sass has got a mouth on him.
Yeah. I mean, he's an absolute maverick.
So how do you think they're going to get on? Whoever it is takes the field for Pep against Leicester, who have a terrific record against Man City. They've won 2 of their last 3 meetings, most recently the Community Shield. Also, City, I read, have lost all of their last 4 matches away from the Etihad. That's the Community Shield, that Champions League final, and their last 2 Premier League away games. They won't have Gabriel Jesus as it stands because of this FIFA ban situation. What do you think?
Yeah, like you say, Leicester do have a pretty good record against City. They've also won 3 of the last 5 Premier League games at King Power against the reigning champions. Obviously, beat Liverpool last season. And Vardy, who I know I predicted wouldn't score as many goals this season, but he scored more league goals against Pep Guardiola than any other player ever has, including two hat-tricks. Really? So, yeah, if City do have Carson or one of the detectives in goal, then I think, you know, Vardy will be licking his lips. So, looking forward to it. But again, it's at 3 o'clock, so, you know. Yeah.
But will he get any chances? Because I had a look at some of the stats ahead of this game, and Leicester, believe it or not, 6 points on the board, have created the fewest chances of anyone in the league, even less than Palace, who've barely had a shot. So, yeah, it's not been that impressive from the Foxes.
It's a really strange league, but other than Arsenal, who, as we discussed, probably should be bottom based on their numbers. You know, Wolves should probably be, you know, top four, but aren't. Tottenham, have only four teams have created fewer open play chances than Spurs, and yet they're top and haven't let in a goal. So I think there's going to be a lot of, the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of kind of reorganisation of the league table. I think a few teams will climb up or slip down. So, but yeah, City invariably, their numbers are good. So.
Okay. Will their numbers be good this Saturday at 3 o'clock, Duncan, call it?
No, it's going to be 2-2. Okay.
All right, more Premier League next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Noz, what game do you really, really feel inspired by this weekend? Apart from the ones we've already discussed, you can have Leeds, Liverpool, Chelsea, Villa, Brentford, Brighton, or perhaps Saints, West Ham, or even Watford, Wolves.
I hate to be boring, but Leeds versus Liverpool looks a bit tastier. I'm actually really intrigued by Harvey Elliott and the fact that he's gone straight into the team. Like, I'm by no means a sort of tactical expert or anything, but like I just love, like, he's such an aesthetically pleasing footballer. In that respect, he reminds me of Grealish. Just the way he moves, just the way his passes. I think as football fans, quite often, especially if you're at the ground, you can see the pass that you want the player to make, and because of your view, you can see the pass better than the player. He's the type of player that will play the pass you don't see, and it's just interesting. It's interesting where his future lies, whether it's further forward or in that midfield. But just the fact that Klopp obviously trusts him already. I wonder whether he could sort of develop into like the next Grealish, that player who's not perhaps got the lightning speed but can dribble past players, is a playmaker, almost like a Rui Costa type player.
He can score goals, no doubt about that. He showed that in the Championship. He's got a decent finish on him. I think he's a hybrid between that sort of attacking box to box midfielder or one of the three up top. For Liverpool, he can fit into both. So that's another reason for Klopp to love him, I guess. I do fancy Liverpool in this game, got to say. Mm-hmm. Their away record was great last season in a very average season. I think they only lost once on the road to top 10 teams, won a lot of those matches. They're unbeaten in quite a long time. And as we know, Leeds are shocking, aren't they, at defending set pieces, corners, wide free kicks. Leeds fans sort of have kittens every time they concede one. And against Burnley last weekend, they look wobbly again. They clearly haven't been able to fix that issue. And Liverpool, look really good at corners and wide free kicks. Van Dijk and Matip are massive, and we know the deliveries are great. I think Liverpool could sort of wreak havoc from those at the weekend.
Yeah, that was a big loss they had last season with all the changes. They really, you know, compared to some teams, they did rely quite a lot on set-piece goals. And I think only Brighton this season have created more chances from corners than Liverpool. So, yeah, I think you're completely right. It's a massive weapon to have, particularly Van Dijk back. So
I'm fascinated by the Daniel James transfer, obviously coming from United, just for the fact that I don't think there's ever been a situation where a player has moved from two massive rivals like that and everyone seemed to like him. Like, it's so weird. Like, usually, if it's sort of fierce rivals, either the team where he's going to don't want that player because he's tainted with the previous club, or the club that's selling, the fans feel as if, like, he's a traitor and he's crossed the line. But there's something about Daniel James, and I don't know if the fact he's such a wholesome character, and he tries so hard and he's not let anyone down, that everyone seems to love him, like whether it's Leeds fans, United fans, or anyone. And even United fans who felt he wasn't quite good enough to play for United, and didn't feel he had the potential to become that player. Like, even they can sort of concede that, like, he's a really nice lad, and they perhaps don't go as far as say good luck at Leeds, but the goodwill is pretty unique.
Which camp do you belong to, Nos?
He's one of these players that I like just because he tries so hard and he does a lot of selfless stuff for the team, even in terms of tracking back. But I don't quite feel he had everything in his locker to be the player that United need. Obviously he's got the pace, but like, he didn't have his technical ability wasn't good enough to perhaps counter the fact that he's not the biggest. Like, if he was physically imposing, or if he was a powerful runner, that would make a difference. But I think he's a really talented player, and he has got a higher ceiling than people think. But perhaps he just came at the wrong time, and that thing that makes him going to Leeds romantic in the fact that he almost did. In the famous All or Nothing documentary, like, perhaps history is being corrected. Maybe he was meant to go there and he was meant to do really well there, and it was just the wrong time to come to Manchester United.
What Nos said about him being a trier is bang on. I did some analysis on Dan James earlier in the week, and only one player made more sprints per match last season than Dan James. So if anyone's going to fit in with Bielsa, and that sort of hard work that he makes the players get through, then I think it is Dan James. Ollie Burke, who obviously is now in the Championship, he had the most sprints per 90, a ridiculous amount, but I think that was mainly because he came off the bench. And to some degree, I suppose, Dan James, that might have swayed his stats, but he was averaging 29 sprints per game. Right behind him is Rafinha of Leeds. So you think about those two guys working in tandem, maybe on each wing. They are going to torment teams when they're both fit and available, I think.
Right. Well, when they're available, which won't be this weekend. As it stands, once again, hashtag FIFAgate, Rafinha is currently banned for this fixture, as is for Liverpool, Alisson, Fabinho and Firmino. Crikey. Was a bit of a classic at Anfield last season. And when they met at Elland Road in the return, it was just after the European Super League business. Do you remember? And the Leeds players did the warm-up wearing T-shirts, Champions League, earn it. And then they left those shirts in the Liverpool dressing room and the whole thing collapsed shortly afterwards. Duncan?
That was the lowest point I've ever had watching Premier League football, I think, that game. Because not only was it behind closed doors and the Super League had kind of undermined the whole edifice. It was just like, what's the point? Remember that Monday Night Football did some amazing analysis and then they, at 2 minutes to eight, said, let's cross to the game. And it should have just carried on. Because, you know, but luckily everything turned out fine and it's all good now, so that's good.
Good. All right. Chelsea are playing Villa. Martinez and Buendia are both isolating. They did go to Argentina for their game, but because it's a red zone country, they you know, they have to stay at home. Villa took 4 points off Chelsea last season. But was that this Chelsea? I'm not sure. Anyway, looking forward to seeing how that game turns out. But let's turn our thoughts quickly to Brentford and Brighton. two teams with a lot in common. They both had good starts to the season, although Brighton got knocked back a bit last time out by Everton. They're both owned by former City traders turned sports betting tycoons, Matthew Benham at Brentford and Tony Bloom at Brighton. And Benham used to work for Bloom after he left the City to go into the sports betting business.
Benham and Bloom sounds like the BBC remake of Sass and Van Sass and Slicker, doesn't it? Like, it's not quite as good. They didn't have the budget, but, you know, pretty good acting performances. So
right. Benham and Bloom also have beef. Did you know that?
That's right. But nobody knows why, do they, Adrian? Do you know why?
I read that.
All right.
He left. Benham left the company that Bloom was working for. They were both working for.
Well, it was it was his company, no?
Yeah, I think he was perceived as a sort of disloyal act because he went and set up something quite similar elsewhere. So,
right.
I think there's they're definitely not best buddies.
No, Benham set up Smart Odds, while Tony Bloom famously has Star Lizard, named after his poker-playing identity. I actually, many years ago, met Tony Bloom when he was notable as a top-level poker player known as the Lizard. The Lizard, there you go. Which one do you have posters on the wall of at Opta? Is it Matthew Benham, Duncan? Because they're both big kind of analytical approach fans.
Yeah, well, I think it's quite an interesting fixture, this, because if you think about it, historically, Brentford v Brighton is a League One game. It really is. But if you look at how football has changed in the UK in the last 20 years, obviously the hotbeds of football, the North East, Yorkshire, you know, the Midlands, a lot of those places have really lost clubs at the top level. And clubs like Brentford, Brighton, Southampton, Bournemouth, you know, they've got big catchment areas. Brentford not so much, but Brentford do a really good job at sort of sweeping up Premier League B players. And it's, you know, that not only is, I guess, it's followed wealth slightly, but also Brentford and Brighton have both shown that, you know, you can get to the top level through careful management and careful use of data and things like that. So, it's an interesting fixture. This fixture has been played in every division and except the top flight until this weekend.
Interesting.
I'd usually have no interest in this game, but since watching People Just Do Nothing, I've got a soft spot for Brentford because of Corrupt FM.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's based around there. And I'm late to it, but I'm a convert. Amazing show.
I've never seen it, Noz.
Oh, it's so good.
Should I watch it? Yeah?
It's
Adrian,
incredible.
Have you seen People Just Do Nothing?
I haven't seen it. No, never even heard of it.
You and I have got to catch up on that. I'm still catching up on The Sopranos, everyone. So that's
I've not
I'm
seen
at.
The Wire.
All right.
Goodness me.
Anyway, listener, yeah, we'll move on. Don't worry. On a similar big smoke against South Coast tip, you've also got Southampton against West Ham this weekend. Saints had that 2-2 draw at Newcastle in the previous round. They're still waiting for their first league win of the season. West Ham unbeaten, but they were also held 2-2 last time out. That was Crystal Palace. This game presumably will feature the red-hot Mikel Antonio up against his old club. He won the only silverware of his career so far at Saints. A long time ago, back in 2010, the Johnston's Paint Trophy. Crikey. Nowadays, as a Premier League bona fide superstar, he's leading the league for goals and shots and is second, to only Paul Pogba, in the number of assists. Wow. Can I throw one more set of numbers at you before you get excited about that? He also had to make a 10,500-mile round trip this week to make his Jamaica debut. They lost 3-0 against Panama. Crikey. Mikel Antonio, everyone.
What a player. He's just developed into the all-action centre-forward hero, hasn't he? And look, I think he'll be rubbing his hands at the prospect of getting at Southampton's defence. They have been conceding goals. Long, long time since they were consistently keeping clean sheets. And yeah, no team in the calendar year has earned fewer points than Southampton. So if you're the most informed centre-forward in the Premier League, you want to be playing Southampton this weekend. So yeah, I'm excited to see what he can deliver. With jet lag?
I'd completely... Did you know that he was a former Saints player?
Do you know what? I cannot picture him in the Southampton shirt. I can't. I can picture him playing for Colchester, but not Southampton. It's a strange one. That one kind of passed me by. You as well, I guess.
I think he's got something to prove as well, because like after that amazing celebration that he had with the cardboard cutout, the fact he didn't know it was Dirty Dancing and thought it was what did he think it was? Save the Last Dance.
Save the Last Dance. It totally ruined it for me.
It sullied it for me, that celebration.
How many times do you think he thought of that on the long flight there? But I bet he was just like, oh, I'd swap.
Can you imagine if he switched on the in-flight entertainment and what comes up is Dirty Dancing? Oh my god.
And didn't he hold it? He held it the wrong way as well, because the fans inside the stadium, because I just see the back, and
it wasn't for the fans, he got that wrong as well, didn't he?
So,
the cameras, that's where it's at.
Yeah, he's thinking of the cameras. That's it.
Yeah. We could have got a double-sided one, really. I mean, you know, you're that confident you're going to go.
If you did that, would you put the same on both sides, or would you have your backside on the backside? Because that would have your name on the shirt as well, so it would work. Just, you know. Anyway, Watford Wolves is another of those Saturday 3 o'clock games. Watford off to a great start this season, at least for the first 70 minutes of their game against Aston Villa. They were leading 3-0. Since then, though, it's been a complete downward spiral. They've conceded 5 goals without reply as they prepare to face the kind of statistical enigma that is Bruno Lage's Wolves. Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, as we said before, I don't understand Wolves. They're breaking every model out there. I mean, if you look at chances created from open play, which is generally a pretty good way of seeing good teams, Liverpool and Manchester City have created 42, and the only team that's done as many as Wolves also with 42. So they haven't scored, they haven't got a point. Something's got to change. And you presume it will be this weekend against Watford, because, you know, Raúl Jiménez has looked a little bit rusty, unsurprisingly, but he's getting into the right positions, and, you know, it will happen.
Dim people like me who don't really get analytics would say, well, if they're creating loads of chances but not scoring any, that's probably just that people can't finish very well, and maybe Raúl Jiménez, God bless him, after his terrible injury, is not quite at it. Well,
finished. I mean, no.
At the moment, it may be taking a bit longer to get back to kind of peak Jiménez-ness.
Yeah, true. And that probably is part of the reason. But the fact is, if you keep creating that amount of chances, it's not going to carry on. That. I mean, I find Vicarage Road quite a creepy stadium now, in a sense. Because for me, the whole current paradigm began. They beat Liverpool 3-0 on February the 29th, Ferran Torres' 5th birthday, 2 years ago. And that was obviously one of the last games before
Sorry,
the
pandemic.
Sorry, did
you say 5th birthday?
Yeah, because his 29th of February is only celebrated 5 birthdays, technically. So, but that match obviously ended that incredible run from Liverpool. And I think Wolves can kind of restore some sort of parity to the universe by ending their unluckiness at Vicarage Road. I think there's a kind of ley line outcome that we can all get behind.
Okay. Watford have a tremendous home record, by the way, under Cisco Munoz. There's another Munoz for you, Noz. They've played 15 games there at the creepy Vicarage, and they've only lost one.
Are we basically saying that Wolves 0 points is more impressive than Arsenal 0 points, or sort of points to more optimism? Do you think?
It's a good point. I think if you look at the bottom three, who've all got 0 points. Arsenal very bad. Norwich, you know, kind of in the middle, and Wolves should not be in the bottom three with 0 points. You could probably replay Wolves and Spurs this season, and obviously Spurs beat Wolves, and they could be in, you know, reverse positions, and it wouldn't be outlandish. So, yeah, Wolves will improve, but let's hope they can do it this weekend.
Well, don't let Daniel Story catch you looking at the table before October.
Yeah, I hate that attitude. Sorry, Daniel.
Really?
Because the whole point of look at a league table at Christmas. Oh, look, the big four, the big six are up there. League tables early in the season are great, you know. Blackpool are there, and Hull are up there, and, you know, it's good. That's when they're fun.
I also think it's important to have tables, otherwise Adrian would say that Norwich are one of the best teams in the country, and we need to have divisions of that put things into context.
Statistically, it's very true. Very true indeed. All right, excellent. Also, enjoying looking at the table right now are Everton, who will finish off this Premier League round on Monday night. They're at home to Burnley. And they apparently can have Richarlison playing, even though he didn't go to the Brazil game, because Everton previously allowed him to play for the Brazilian national side in the Olympics, so that's okay. I don't know. It's all very confusing, and none of these bans may actually happen. We'll touch on that game more on Monday, perhaps, in our Monday Totally Football show. Some news about which very, very shortly. First of all, though, let's get some odds from Paddy Power with producer Charlie.
Greetings, listener. How are you? I'm sure many of you miss the Premier League, unless you're an Arsenal fan or a Norwich fan. Yes, outside of Old Trafford, all eyes are on the bottom two. Carl Monaghan from Paddy Power, I ask you, can the Canaries win at Arsenal for the first time since August 1992?
Well, the Sharks are circling a certain Spaniard, Charlie, and the pressure is definitely on. This game on paper looks the perfect opportunity for Arteta to buy himself some much-needed time, as September could be a good month for the Gunners if they can get some momentum going. But it's also a double-edged sword, this fixture, as quite frankly, a loss or even an uninspired sharing of the spoils could be enough to see Arteta finally walk the plank. He is the 4-9 favourite, Charlie, to be the next Premier League manager to leave his post. In terms of the Norwich attack, there is no Ruel Fox or Mark Robbins this time round for Arsenal to contend with, but the Canaries did play well against Leicester last time out, and Pukki is up and running after converting a pen in that 2-1 defeat to the Foxes. To answer the question you posed at the start, Charlie, no, I don't think Norwich will win, but I think they're great value for a draw at 130 against a fragile Arsenal who may well be privately preparing mentally for a new voice in the dressing room very soon.
I've got my eyes on Stamford Bridge, Chelsea Villa, Romelu Lukaku in front of the home fans for the first time since re-signing. There's no Emi Martinez, he nearly caused an international incident. Will Rom run rampant?
Yeah, he may well do just that, Charlie. He scored a couple against Estonia last week and then followed it up with another strike against the Czechs last Sunday, which was his 67th international goal. So he's in the mood, definitely, despite being on a never-ending mission to address the doubters on social media. His latest tweet, Charlie, was, "Mindset is key to most things. No matter how hard the struggle is and what BS people are saying out there, keep going." So, Lukaku, with this new monk-like focus, Charlie, is one to be feared. We here at Paddy Power can picture him smashing one past the Villa number 2, Jed Steer. We've made him 21-10 and the favourite to be the first goal scorer. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, he's also the favourite in the top goal scorer market, Charlie, at a price of 130, ahead of the likes of Salah, Ronaldo and Kane.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Now, next Monday's Totally is going to be up, listener, a little bit later than of late. This is due to someone now being a bit busy on a Sunday night rounding up Serie A action. My apologies for that disruption, but I do hope you enjoy our new direction. It'll be up essentially kind of lunchtime-ish on Monday. Yes, again, apologies if that wreaks havoc with your fans. But on the plus side, if you do fancy it, 7 o'clock Sunday night, you can now join me and Horndog doing all the weekend's news and goals from Serie A. This weekend, for example, we'll be bringing you the action from Napoli-Juve, which is 5 o'clock on Saturday, and Milan-Lazio, big games, which is Sunday tea time. And then at 7:45... Our first Sunday night live game, do you know what it is? Of course they don't, listener. Why would they? It's Roma-Sassuolo, though. Yes, Roma-Sassuolo. I'm excited about this because it's Tammy Abraham, who's been the star of the opening two rounds in Italy, and Jose Mourinho, a man who knows a little bit about Sass himself, and who's been having a brilliant time of it, and other stars like Lorenzo Pellegrini. Anyway, yeah. And they're both, surprisingly, playing really open, attractive football. Will you be tuning in, Noz?
Oh, definitely. For you, if nothing else. I'm also interested to see how Mourinho's Instagram game will reflect his performances, because you kind of see that when things are going well, he's like a jocular uncle. Like we've had the recent one with the pizza, but when things are going bad, I mean, the best you get out of him is just looking moody on the coach back, must do better or something. So, yeah, so the thing with Mourinho is, for all his faults, he's able to be incredibly charming and likable when he wants to be. So, let's hope there's more of that.
most recently telling Xhaka to get vaccinated, which, you know, is a positive message.
But all the thing with that is that he said like get vaccinated and then hope you get better or something like that, and then Xhaka just took the like get well soon sort of message. He didn't comment on the actual vaccination, so he was a bit cagey in that respect, and it's not like Xhaka to be cagey about anything.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, that's what I'm going to be doing on Sunday. Any of you got exciting plans for your weekend?
I am going to be at Emirates on Saturday, but on Sunday for the radio, I'm going to be at Chris Hughton's last game in charge of Nottingham Forest when they play Cardiff City. And so that could be quite an interesting occasion if they lose.
If they lose. They did pick up a point last time, Adrian, against...
They did, yeah, in the derby, against Derby. But yeah, look, Chris Hughton's... Yeah, he's not got the backing of the Forest support at the moment. I know that. And I think a defeat against Cardiff, who I think would be favourites there, might spell the end.
Duncan, what are you up to?
I'll be watching the M40 Classico, Britain's leading derby, about a mid-ranking British motorway, Oxford Wickham. So let's hope the best team wins.
All right. And Noz?
Well, apart from producing amazing content for Project Football, I'll tell you what, this weekend will be far better than last weekend because I went to Soccer Aid and it was the most...
Did you?
It was the most soulless... Yeah. I went because my sister and nephew wanted to go, and like I know it's for charity, and I know that people who are involved like do it for the right reasons. But because I watch any football, but it's not football, and it's just.
I thought you liked watching people in their late 30s run around playing football. I thought that was the new vibe.
Very good.
Noz, who was in the Soccer Aid teams?
I couldn't tell you most of them. There was somebody called Youngblood. With red hair, that was sort of like... The weird thing is that even the little kids that were dead enthusiastic, they lost interest. And in the end, most of the interest was coming in because the tickets were on A4 pieces of paper and everyone was just making paper airplanes and trying to get it on the pitch. So like there was a random cheers for when like something nearly got to the playing area. But yeah, it was just dismal. It's not... And half time went on for like 40 minutes.
Game's gone. The Soccer Aid game has gone.
Yeah.
The only good... Well, not the only good thing about Soccer Aid. Raises a lot of money for charity. But the... things, we've analysed it in the past. So I'm not sure if we did this time. But it means that in the database, alongside your Ronaldos and your Messis and your Maradonas, your Robbie Williams and et cetera, your Lee Max have got player ID numbers. So it's quite...
Brilliant.
You know, sometimes I just like to look and go, well... We're all the same deep down.
Right.
But we're not.
I thought Adrian giving Gareth Southgate a kicking was going to be the, you know, morally the low point of this show, but it turns out that we can have a go at charities too. So there you go. Nice one, Noz. Excellent. Anyway, that wraps it up then for today's show. Do make sure that you join us around about Monday lunchtime. Listener, for our reaction to the weekend. For now, many, many thanks to Duncan, to Adrian and to Noz and producer Charlie. Hope everyone has a terrific weekend with everything they get up to. And for now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.